Hi, this is Dennis Hoyle from Bellwether Games, and you're listening to The Family Gamers.
Hey everybody, this is Andrew from The Family Gamers, and I am here with my wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And we are here, and we're a little mundane because we're in an airport. It's a travel edition of The Family Gamers podcast. This is episode number 75.
75.
So this show is a compilation of all of our interviews from PAX Unplugged. And of course, we are The Family Gamers, and on the show floor for the show, we had our kids. And so we brought our kids. Say hi, Asher.
Hi.
And Claire.
Hi.
So the four of us, last week you heard Anitra and I talk all about our stuff a lot. And so we're just going to spend a little bit of time with Asher and Claire, and we're going to talk about the things that they liked at the show. So who should we start with? You want to go first, Ash?
Yeah.
Or ladies first?
Me.
All right, Asher, tell me about one game that you really liked that you saw at PAX Unplugged.
The laser game, I forgot what it's called again.
The laser game, Laser Riders from Greater Than Games?
Yeah.
What did you like about it?
How you're trying to, like, build a laser to capture these things.
Crystals?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Was it hard?
Yeah.
Yeah, what was hard about it?
Like, when you rolled the die... When you need to try to get the right number to, like, make a turn,
mm-hmm.
That was one of the hard parts.
Yeah, so when you're going really fast, when you're in a high gear, when you roll that six-sided die, you have to get a number that's higher than your gear or equal to your gear. Otherwise, you fail to turn and you have to go straight.
Oh, wow. That sounds hard.
Right. So that part was hard?
Yeah.
Can you remember who won that game?
Me.
Of course. All right, your turn, Claire. Tell me about a game you saw at PAX Unplugged that you really liked.
I really liked Sumer.
Okay, so Sumer we talked a little bit about last week. Sumer was a video game that is kind of like a board game from Studio Wumpus, right?
Yeah.
So what did you like about Sumer?
I like that, like, you have to do all the stuff, and, like, you have to put your guys in, like, the goats and the wheat and like... If you go to sleep first, you get more of the thing that you went to.
Yeah, you get a bonus.
And if in the second round or third, you get to make bread and clay, and you get to make it into pots. So it gets, like, a little bit more complicated every time it goes.
So it sounds like you like the fact that it's a real-time resource strategy game.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Asher, do you want to list another game that you liked?
I also liked The Grim Forest.
Okay, that's the game from James Hudson and Druid City Games that we are super excited about. We should be getting it in about a month and a half.
I'm gonna pick it.
What did you like about The Grim Forest?
You're trying to build a house.
You're trying to build three houses, but in the demo we were only building one.
You're trying to build three houses, the first one to build three houses is the winner.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you have a guy, and you put it on a thing, and you get that.
So your piggy goes to market to get either straw or wood or stone.
Or all of them.
Or all of them, depending on what the special moves are.
And, like, when you have enough of that type, you can pay to get that type of house.
Right.
Yeah.
So you like that game a lot?
Yeah.
And plus, all the art is really pretty, and all the miniatures are super cool.
And what's Claire's favorite part of that game?
What's your favorite part of The Grim Forest?
I think it's, like, trying to figure out where you should go. Like, well, I have this much of the straw house and this much of the wood house. Mm-hmm. But the wood house is better than the straw house, so I should get the wood instead of the straw.
Yeah, and, I mean, when we were playing the full game, you just build three houses, or you have to build one of each? I don't remember exactly.
Just three houses,
but the harder houses to build give you more victory points.
Yeah.
So there's also a part that's like social deduction, because if you go somewhere where the same person went, you have to split stuff. But if you could figure out where everybody else is going to go and you go somewhere else, then you don't have to split with them. You get more, you get all the stuff, and that makes it so you can build faster. So there's a lot of thinking and stuff going on. And then there's all the friend cards and stuff. Plus there's really cool minis like the giant and the dragon.
Yeah. Like, well, which one was the giant, or is it the bridge troll?
The bridge troll.
I like, another thing I liked about that game is that I really liked the design of the game.
You like the artwork and the style and stuff? Yeah, that was Mr. Cuddlesworth or something like that is the name of the designer. They do unbelievable work. I know James has done a lot of work with them. So what about you, Claire? You gave us one game, which was Sumer. What's another game you liked?
I like Blank.
Blank. Yeah, we know you like Blank from the Creativity Hub. We've talked about that a lot. What's your favorite part of the game?
The fact that if you win, you get to make a card after.
So you like the fact that you can sort of explore your inner creativity.
Yes.
Cool. All right. Asher, do you have another game that you liked?
I also liked the game where you need to, like, act as a superhero.
Oh, you're talking about the Sentinels of the Multiverse RPG starter pack that I have in my bag right over there? Yeah. So you're super excited to play that one?
Yeah.
Cool. And what about you, Claire? Can you give me one more game that you liked? But I tell you what did you guys think of helping Mom and Dad do a panel on Sunday? Was that fun?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really liked it. Like, we all actually did something in it. It wasn't just Mom and Dad.
Well, we like that too, and that was actually a big focus for us. We wanted to make sure that you were contributing. You remember when we were sitting up there and I poked you, I was like, don't forget to say something. If you have something to say, just let me know. And you did. And you did a great job. And if anybody wants to watch that, you can go to the Family Gamers Facebook page at facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA and scroll down a little bit and you can see it. I think the heading is, we did a thing. Yeah. So definitely check that out. Well, we're gonna wrap up here. We're getting on a plane pretty soon. So stay tuned and listen to all of the awesome interviews that are coming up right now.
So we're here with Andreas from Steve Jackson Games. We love Steve Jackson Games, and we love both of the games that he just played with us. What was your favorite, Claire? You have to talk so that it can hear you. What was your favorite, Asher? Did you like the Simon's Cat game? Can you speak out loud? No? We're going to get used to doing this.
My favorite is Super Kitty Bug's Life.
Excellent. So can you tell us a little bit more about those games for our listeners at home?
So with Super Kitty Bug Slap, both the games, Simon's Cat and Super Kitty Bug Slap, are pretty simple games. I think they would probably work well as family games.
They seem to for us.
Yeah. It's very simple rules. So with Super Kitty Bug Slap, it's a dexterity game. You have a cat. You have three different things that describe your cat. You have either a square cat or a round cat. You have an orange cat or a purple cat, and your cat either has a ladybug or a fly on them. And there's a dealer who throws down the cards, and if you any of the things on those cards match what you have, you slap that cat and take it for yourself. Anything that you get correct is 1 point. Anything you get wrong is 2 points. Negative 2 points, sorry.
So it's a speed matching game.
A speed matching game, yes.
And so, Claire destroyed us all.
Claire really ruined us, yeah.
I was actually supposed to get 20 points because it was minus.
Okay, well, even 20 points was still way more than anybody else.
Just creamed us. Yeah. Really
no,
creamed
it was,
us.
It was only 5 more than him.
Only 5 more. That's 5 more cards.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's 25% more.
10 minutes. 10 minutes until pass.
Okay.
And Simon's Cat, another matching game. I guess our matching and cat theme is strong today. Hopefully we make more matching cat games. So Simon's Cat is another matching game. You have somebody starts a stack of cards, and you're trying to match either the color or the number on those cards. And if you don't match, you take the stack, you put it in front of you, your cat has made a mess. And,
but you told me the unique thing about this game is that unlike a game like Uno, the cards are not evenly distributed amongst the suits.
Right, and you don't go back and forth. You don't change directions or anything like that. It's a different kind of strategy.
Unlike Crazy Eights, then, let's
right,
say.
Crazy Eights, that's a good one. We'll just use generic card games.
Yes.
So the unique thing about the game is that the distribution of the numbers within each of the different suits is completely messed up on purpose because we like tripping people up because that's where the fun is in this game. So we have six different suits with six different colors, and each of those colors has its own character from the Simon's Cat YouTube series.
Yes.
And, so we have a suit that starts... We have the higher suits that start at 3. Simon's Cat himself, the pink, goes from 3 to 12. There's no other 11 and 12 in the whole game.
Yeah.
There's the blue, which has the kitten on it, that goes from 3 to 10. The only other 10 is within the pink suit.
Yep.
We have a hedgehog that goes from 3 to 8. And then we have the lower suits that start at 1. We have the... the dog... The purple dog goes from 1 to 6. The mouse, which is orange, goes from 1 to 4. And then we have the gnome, which goes from 1 all the way to 2.
Yes.
Which is a real... That's like the jerk card.
Yeah.
If you have a gnome, it's just, you know... I created this phrase, oh, gnome, you didn't. when somebody plays the gnome, because you're always...
It's really hard
It's always vicious.
Yeah.
So, And it's, you know, it's adorable, but it's kind of, you know, mean, just like cats, really.
Yes.
You can play it very casually. We just played it with kids.
Yes.
Or you can play it very strategically, and there's different layers of strategy that go into that game. There's card counting, there's hand management, there's psyching people out, and a few other things. And once you get good at the game, you can kind of... use those strategies to win more consistently. Obviously, I did not win
any of these games. But that makes you a good demonstrator.
That's my excuse. Is that, you know, when you're demoing, you never win the game. Totally not having an off day.
Well, it was very good to meet you, Andreas, and good luck in demoing games for the rest of the day.
Thank you very much.
At least a few times.
I try not to. You know, it makes people like the games better.
Hey, everybody. It is Andrew from the Family Gamers. We are on the show floor at PAX Unplugged. The doors just opened, and the crowd is about to begin. Crowd coming in. But I actually got a chance to sit down in advance with Brett Sobol from Nauvoo Games, and we... played a game called Crosstalk, or we kind of did a half play of this game. I am super excited to play this game with my family because it is a very clever party game. Why don't you talk a little bit about it?
So Crosstalk is all about having subtle conversations, kind of talking past other people. The way it works is there's two teams, and each team is a clue giver. The goal of the clue giver is to get their team to guess a secret word or a phrase before the other team is able to. So what happens is the clue givers alternate giving one word public clues after they've given a secret private clue to their team. So really you kind of have these sidebar conversations that the other team is listening in on. And you have to be careful because after each public clue that you give, the other team, and only the other team, actually gets to guess. And that's where a lot of tension gets put into the game. We also have some hint boards that you can use to spice it up, introducing things like opposites or synonyms that you can communicate to your team, and you can really throw the other team off here. So it is a very accessible family game. We say it goes up to 8 players, but really I've played it with up to 12 and it works terrific. We're running a special on Crosstalk from now until the end of the year. So if you buy it on our website or even on Miniature Market, you're going to be able to buy it at a pretty heavily discounted price. I think it's up to 40% or maybe 50% off even on these sites. So be sure to check it out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you were showing me the game and I think my favorite part of the game is there's this kind of private clue for your team and public clue for everybody dynamic. But, you know, when we were kind of trying it out, I definitely went in one direction where I had related words that didn't make sense if you didn't know what the other one was. And you went with basically like a conjugated term. And then we were talking about ways that you could write down, if you think the other team is going down the wrong path, you can write down clues that would encourage them to continue doing the wrong thing and then tell your team privately to ignore them. So I just, there's a lot of really, really clever dynamics in it.
Thank you. Yeah, we wanted it to be a Codenames-esque level where you can play it with everybody, but we wanted it to be cerebral enough that it's really a gamer's party game, right? Like, it's family accessible, but it's also got the extra level of like head game that you're playing the other players thing. And that's what people love about this. So if you play games regularly, Crosstalk is going to be the party game for you.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely had some of those kind of like taboo-like feels where you're trying to get your people to guess the words by hinting at them. But I mean, it's much more complex while still being just as accessible. Yep. And I think that's great.
Yeah, I would argue it's easier for the clue givers to get started in the game because you can write down any word, but it's, you know, in the guessing of the game and kind of getting in the minds of your fellow teammates that really becomes a lot of fun and makes the game shine.
Yeah, I am super excited to put this on the table next week during Thanksgiving because I think, you know, I have two siblings and then my mom's going to be there and my mother-in-law is going to be there and everybody's going to be coming at the game from a different dimension, really. And then we'll have the kids in as well. It's going to be pretty wild.
Awesome. Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on it. And, you know, for everybody else out there listening, hope you take a look at it. We've got some reviews done on it, but I can't wait for your final thoughts.
It's going to be great. I'm really, really excited. So you've got some other stuff in the booth, and I think I'd be remiss if I didn't at least give you a chance to talk about those. You have Stockpile, which came out earlier than Crosstalk, right? It was the first game you guys released?
That's right, yeah. Stockpile is our first game. It's an award-winning game. The Dice Tower recognizes the best game from a small publisher in 2015, so we won their award. Stockpile has been out for now 2 years, and it is all about insider trading in the stock market, so that's what we're most known for. I would encourage everybody to check that out as well. It's also a family game. So, you know, I think everybody would also really appreciate looking at it and be surprised at how accessible it is. So we've had kids as young as 8 really play it and have a terrific time with it. It's all about auction and bidding and kind of say more of those information dynamics. I know something you don't. Very similar in some ways to Crosstalk in that regard. There you go, number 25 of On Board Game Geek on the family category.
So. Oh, well, awesome. There you go. And then finally, I have to mention this. We have some good friends who are huge Brandon Sanderson fans.
Oh, really?
And, like, huge. I showed them a picture of this, and he's kind of jealous that I get to talk to you about it. So you have a game coming out on Kickstarter next year, January of 2018, called The Reckoners, which is based on Brandon Sanderson's work. So talk about that.
So The Reckoners is going to be a cooperative game, big box cooperative game, where you play as one of the members of The Reckoners that takes place in the city of New Cago, which is Chicago in this post-apocalyptic setting, right? And what happens is it's sort of like a cooperative King of Tokyo, actually. So everyone simultaneously has all these dice, and they roll them and take actions. And the goal of the game is to take out this big bad villain known as the High Epic, Steelheart, in the first book. And it's kind of a fight a bunch of mini-bosses to then kill the big bad guy type of feel. It plays in about 75 minutes and really has some unique mechanics that we're introducing here. A lot of dice, which you don't typically see in a co-op game. So we're really excited about it. Brandon's team has been terrific to work with. So if you're a fan of the book series, you're going to love this game. And if you like cooperative games, this is going to provide something really unique and fresh in that genre. And I think the production value on it's going to be something that's never been seen before in the game industry. We're going to bring some sort of Mechs and Minions style insert into the game itself. So you're going to play with beautiful, like, custom plastic boards all over the place.
Speak my language.
It's going to be awesome.
So, how can people get a hold of you? How can people find out more about your games other than coming to thefamilygamers.com, of course?
Yep. Please check out our website. It's the best way to see us or on social media. So www.nabugames.com or via social media. Nabu Games is our Facebook account and our Twitter. Check us out there. You can find more news about specials for Crosstalk, Stockpile, and also more about what we're going to do with The Reckoners very soon.
Awesome. So that's Nabu, N-A-U-V-O-O Games.
That's right. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Andrew.
Hello, everybody. This is Andrew on the show floor at PAX Unplugged 2017, the inaugural PAX Unplugged. I just played a few games in the DeVere Americas booth. I am here with Matt Hyland. How are you doing today?
Doing great, thank you.
So you were just telling me a little bit about how Devir got started about, I guess, 30 years ago? Did you say 87? Is that what you said?
Yeah, 1987. It's our 30th anniversary.
That's crazy. That's a long time. And but basically, really starting last year, you've been coming to the States and doing some distribution in the States.
Yeah, that's right. Up till now, we've been focused on Iberian languages, so Portuguese and Spanish games, but now we're doing English.
Cool. And so we sat down and we played three games today. We played Checkpoint Charlie, which is kind of a sort of a deduction game. We played Fast Food Fear, which is sort of a cooperative card sharing game where you've got monsters that you've got to feed different foods to. And then we just wrapped up with Dragons and Chickens, which is this kind of dexterity game with multiple layers of not really deduction, but noticing things.
I call it an observation game.
Yeah, an observation game. Yeah. Like a spotted or something like that, and then with a little bit of dexterity mixed in.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. You know, we're trying to get more into the family games area, so I hope you guys liked them.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the kids definitely had different different perspectives depending on which one you talk to. But you've got lots of stuff. And so you have a pretty vast library from 30 years in the industry of games that you've been publishing in Spanish and Portuguese. And some of that stuff you're now able to bring to the English market.
So, yeah, but all the stuff you see in English is actually pretty new. So most of the things we've been doing historically are games under license. So some of the big titles like Catan and Carcassonne. But all these, we have our own publishing department, and they work with game developers, mostly in Europe, to come up with new titles that we can try and launch here in the States.
Cool. So, I mean, because that was one of the things for me, you know, I didn't really recognize the name of the publisher, but that's because I speak one language and it's English. So that actually makes sense. I feel a little bit better about myself.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that. You know, we're new on the scene, and I hear that a lot. Of course, you know, who are you guys? And nobody really knows the story because there's been no reason to promote the story.
Right, right. But, you know, and you just mentioned you're trying to get into family games. There's a lot of variety here in terms of both the different kinds of games and also really like the age level that would be able to consume games like these.
Yeah, so actually internally we kind of divide the games into three categories, which would be a family game, and then Family Plus, which is an accessible game with a little bit more strategy, and then the expert games. So those would be like your war games, your really heavy Euro games, and so forth. We're trying to do a little bit for each audience, kind of just to kind of test the market and see how things go.
So here we are, we're on the back half of day one of PAX Unplugged. How's it been for you so far?
Oh, it's been great. We're just launching a game called Michael Strogoff, which is based on a Jules Verne novel, and it's selling really well. It's got great artwork, and you know, I'm just really happy to be here in Philadelphia. I think it's a great city. I'm having a good time, and I'm glad that there's a show that can address the northeastern part of the U.S. and get board game fans here some big show to go to.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm really enjoying this kind of board game only vibe, right? Yeah. Because there's other cons, but they're kind of blended, and so I really like having this vibe. It's definitely a different feel.
Yeah, it's great, and I'm really anxious to meet more people and you know, show them our games because they probably haven't had a whole lot of exposure yet.
All right. So other than what we're going to talk about on our show, on our website and stuff like that, where can people find you guys online?
Well, you can always go to DevirGames.com. We also have a Facebook page, Devir Games, and Twitter, of course, at Devir Games. But if you want to buy our products, we do sell on Amazon ourselves if you can't find the games. Or you can go to your local friendly local game store and have them request it from their distributor. We're in most of the big distributors, so that's the way you get them.
Awesome. Everybody loves their friendly local game store. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with me and showing me some of your games. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for your time. It was a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks. Hey, everybody. This is Andrew from the Family Gamers on the show floor, PAX Unplugged 2017. I am standing in the USAopoly booth with Jake Davis. How are you doing today?
Wonderful. Thanks for having us. Thanks for coming by.
Absolutely. So we just got finished playing Codenames Disney.
Yeah, so Codenames Disney, really excited. We released it about a month ago. Partnered with Czech Games to do licensed versions of the great game that is Codenames. So our first ones are Disney Family Edition and the Marvel Edition. In both of these games, you have pictures on one side and words on another. So you can play all pictures, all words, or a combination of the two if you'd like. Same rules for Codenames. You know, you're trying to get your team to guess the corresponding cards on the grid. So you're going back and forth, giving that one word clue and the number to get your team to guess correctly. One thing about Disney that's a little bit different is that we've aged it down a little bit, so families can play with their kids by giving a 4x4 grid instead of the traditional 5x5. So that 4x4 does not have a game over card or the assassin, as people are familiar in the core game of Codenames. So it makes it a little more accessible for children, so they don't feel too discouraged if they pick the wrong word. It's a great game. Disney covers 90 years of Disney, anything from early Mickey Mouse to Moana, so it is as current as we could make it.
Nice. And so we didn't play it, but you also have Codenames Marvel out.
Yes. So, like I was saying, for Disney, Marvel, pictures on one side, words on another. It is all based on the Marvel comics. And a few things about that game is that the teams are Team S.H.I.E.L.D. versus Team Hydra. The assassin is now Thanos. And the bystanders are the Infinity Stones and the Infinity Gauntlet. So kind of a fun twist on the Marvel IP, and we're really excited to bring that to Marvel fans of all ages.
That's awesome. So you guys have just tons of stuff. I'm looking at the shelves over here of all the different IP-related variants of so many games that we know and love. I see Munchkin up here. There's Star Trek Panic, which is the Star Trek IP flavor of Castle Panic. There's a bunch of different clues, and obviously you guys are well-known for the stuff that you do with Hasbro, with Monopoly and all that theme stuff as well.
Yeah, so we've had the partnership with Hasbro for many, many years, and keep bringing great license products and mashing them up with classic games. So we got like Golden Girls Monopoly, a Zelda Clue, a Nightmare Before Christmas Clue. We also have a Monopoly Yahtzee Trivial Pursuit. So just kind of bringing those classic Hasbro games and reskinning them with licenses that everybody knows and loves.
I mean, and you guys have been doing this for so long that it's really cool to see you guys sort of transitioning from sort of those classic, I'll say, Walmart Target style games to the more niche gamer demographic.
Yeah, we're really excited. Last year we had a big excitement for a Harry Potter Hogwarts battle game, cooperative deck building game, and that has brought a lot of attention to us, and so we're just excited to keep bringing great games with licenses people know and love, and kind of extend the story, extend the experience of their favorite, whether it's a video game, movie, a TV show, and bring those to life in a tabletop version of a game.
And I would be remiss if I did not mention the game that's actually right in front of us on the table, which is Super Mario Level Up. Which I have to be honest, I had never even heard of before we were looking at the listings and the setup for PAX Unplugged. So is this game out?
Yes.
Is it out like now?
Yeah, this game has been out for several months now. I think it came out earlier this summer. It is a light strategy game where you are using different characters that we all know and love from the Super Mario world, like Yoshi, Peach, Mario, Luigi, Donkey Kong, and so on. And everybody has a lineup card, and what you're trying to do is score the most points on your lineup card. So everybody takes turns moving characters up our little 3D board that we have here, and you're trying to score the most points with that character or with the list of characters you have. There's kind of a voting mechanic and a light bluffing mechanic in there too, so you can kind of mess with other people, help yourself, and it's just a fun game, kind of a little mini game that you find in a Mario Party video game.
Yeah, that is very much what it is like, is one of those mini games. So, all right, so we've got this King Me Super Mario game. We have Disney Codenames and Marvel Codenames. What's next?
I mean, right now we're just excited to release these games to the public. I mean, it's like one of the first times that we had Disney and Marvel Codenames out for people to demo and buy. But yeah, I mean, we're just pumping out great, great games with iconic licenses, so I can't dive into too much of what we're doing next year, but we're just really excited to bring these great games to retail this year. So.
Well, I have to ask, you understand.
More great games to come, I can assure you that.
Awesome. So where can people find your stuff, and like, what's the best place for people to go? Should they go to USAApplet.com or just Amazon, Walmart, Target, friendly local game stores?
Yeah, so you can go to USAApplet.com. We have a list of retailers that you can buy from. There's a where to buy section on the website, so you can check that out. Also, go to your friendly local game store, check out any of the games. If a particular game's not there, you should persuade them to get it because they should have it on their shelves. Otherwise, you can find our games in Barnes & Noble, some in Toys R Us, and everything's on Amazon.
Everything's on Amazon. So what about social media? Where can people contact USAopoly if they want to?
So you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at USAopoly. We post a lot of how to play videos, unboxings, kind of go deeper into some games that, you know, just the box can't show you. So follow us on social media. Get in contact with us. We have a lot of giveaways we do, a lot of promotions. So great way to get involved and win some free stuff and check out the new games that we have up to offer.
Awesome. Well, anybody who listens to Family Gamers knows that we love to give things away, too. So
right on.
With music to my ears.
Well, we should partner up on a little giveaway soon. How about that?
That sounds pretty awesome to me. All right. Well, thank you for spending some time with us today. Yeah. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for coming by and have a good show.
You too. Hey, everybody. Well, here we are at the Dr. Finn's Games booth at PAX Unplugged 2017, the inaugural PAX Unplugged. It's getting close to the end of day one, and I am here with Dr. Finn himself. Steve Finn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How's day one been? It's been pretty busy.
Day one is good. This is the first big convention that I've gone to. I've gone to a lot of small ones, but this is the first time I've had a booth, so I didn't know what to expect. I've got a couple good helpers here from local from Pennsylvania. And it's been good. A lot of people come to the table, a lot of gaming.
Awesome. Well, we've had some of your games in the past. We have Biblios at home. I think we played that with our kids for the first time last week or earlier this week. And so we were excited to see that you guys were here and we wanted to come by. We just sat down and we played The Littlest Flower Shop.
Yeah, The Little Flower Shop. That is a game that was just recently kickstarted and it's in production now. This is one of the copy you played was one of the pre-production copies, and it should be out in a couple months.
That's pretty awesome. So you got a lot of stuff here, and one of the things I love about your games is they've always got rich artwork, right? Even, they're across the spectrum. So if I were to go to the Dr. Finn's Games website, I can look at games like Foragers or Cog, which is one of the new games coming out, or Capo de Copy or Sunset Over Water. They're all gorgeous games.
Well, thanks. I've been spending more and more time and effort into finding good artists and working with them, and it's a part of the game I'm starting to get better at. You know, I think a couple of your earlier games, there were some artistic choices that I kind of made that I look back at. Everyone that I've worked with, I think has done a good job, but I think I'm getting a better eye for what works and what doesn't.
Right. Well, you've got, you've done a few games now with Beth Sobel, who is like one of the prolific board game artists these days.
She is absolutely amazing, and I think I'm scoring, you know, home runs with Beth for sure.
Definitely agree with that. So while we were sitting here playing, there was another lady who came over, and she said that she had kids, and you pulled out a game. I didn't see what it was, but I'd love for you to talk about that for our listeners.
All right, sure. I pulled out Let Them Eat Shrimp, which was actually one of my earliest games, maybe my second or third one that I kickstarted. It was essentially developed as an abstract game, and the basic idea is that you're placing schools of fish onto the board, and they go over fish eggs, and they spawn, and you earn more fish. So there's a lot of geometric shapes in it, so the abstract nature of it is basically there's a hexagon, a triangle, a parallelogram, and other shapes that fit on like a hexagonal kind of board. And every time you place down a shape, you get more shapes back. However, there's also sharks on the board that can eat some of your fish, and there's a starfish that adds a little bit of element of luck that you roll a die to determine a couple different things that can happen. It's a very easy game. You just choose a tile from your supply and place it on the board, and then you do whatever the board tells you to do. So that's the one game when I have families over, it's the easiest game. It also has advanced rules to make it, you know, more appealing to older kids and also adults. But adults really like the game it's kind of a puzzly game because it involves placing shapes, you know, and connecting and seeing things like that. But it's really easy rules, but the strategy is, you know, a little more in depth than it sounds.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we really look for a lot at the Family Gamer. It's something that is maybe a little bit more elegant than Chutes and Ladders.
Yes, absolutely. I never have a game that's just driven by luck, and there's always interesting choices. At least that's what I try to do.
Right. So I know that one of the games that you're kind of featuring at PAX Unplugged is COG.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Now that is not a family game, and it's also outside of like almost all of my other games, with the exception of maybe Foragers. Most of my games are about lighter, medium weight, 30-minute kind of games, or possibly even less. COG is like a full game, and it's a real, it's a strange game, I have to say, because it combines worker placement mechanics with a crossword Scrabble-like game. So a lot of people think, oh, it's a Scrabble, it's a word game, but no, it's not a word game, really, because you're told what words you can spell. So you don't even have to have any kind of vocabulary. In fact, you don't even need to speak English. All you need to be able to do is recognize the letters and match them up with the words that you need to spell on your board. But it's a very heavy game. It's very thinky. Lots of stuff going on in it. But if you are into Scrabble because you like the visual layout of a crossword, and you like games like Castles of Burgundy, which is a Steffenfeld worker placement game, that's the way I usually describe it. I say Castles of Burgundy meets Scrabble. And people are like, what the hell does that mean? It's kind of a weird game. But when people play it, they're like, wow, this is really unique. There's a game called Paperback that combines like Dominion with a word game.
Yep.
So it's a spin-off. Yeah, it's kind of like that. But they did that as well.
That's really interesting because obviously we at the Family Gamers love games and we like heavier games a lot. I know that my mother-in-law loves Scrabble and loves crosswords. So I'm beginning to think in my mind there might be an opportunity for a multi-generational game night in the near future.
Well, good luck. I hope, that would be great. I hope you can, if you could pull out COG and play it with your mom.
My mother-in-law.
Your mother-in-law, yeah, that'd be, I would love that. It'd make me really happy.
But, we'll see what we can do.
She'd have to be into trying something very different because it has a lot going on.
We'll see. She's willing to try things sometimes, so that's pretty cool. What else do you have here? Is there anything else that you're featuring or stuff that's coming either to retail or to Kickstarter very, very soon that you want to mention?
Coming to Kickstarter very soon. I'm very excited about this. I'm going to have a double Kickstarter probably in February that I'm doing two games at once. They're completely unrelated. One of them is Cosmic Run. It's a new version. I think I'm going to call it, I don't have a name, but I think it's going to be Cosmic Run Rebirth or possibly Regenesis or something like that, where I take the original board game that I had of Cosmic Run and I've elaborated upon it. I've changed a lot of rules and it's going to be a much more different game. It's a different game and some developed mechanics. And also I have a game coming out with Beth Sobel doing the artwork, which I'm really excited about. It's called Waters of Nereus. And this is like I think this is going to be the best looking game I've ever made. I had Beth do 28 different illustrations. Each person gets a crew of seven different crew members. They're guiding a ship through the Waters of Nereus, which is a fantasy world, picking up gems and paying off their crew members. Which gives you victory points and powers, and it's going to be a very fun game. I'm really like, the artwork in it is just going to be stunning, and Beth is just doing an amazing job. So I'm very excited about that. So it's a double Kickstarter.
Well, as she is wont to do, of course. tell me, where can people find your games? Where's the best place that you would like people to go to pick up your stuff? I mean, is it friendly local game stores? Is it Amazon? What's the best place for people to get your games?
All right, well, the best place is directly from me at my website. So that is Dr. Finns. You spell out Dr. DrFinns.com. Yes. I also sell on Amazon, but if you go to Amazon, it costs a little more, and Amazon takes a big chunk out. I have a relationship with a number of smaller game stores, and if you can find a game in one of those, I'd rather you actually buy it from them. That's fine. But I don't have many of those. My games, other than Biblios, because I didn't publish Biblios, my games are not distributed. So I sell almost exclusively during Kickstarter campaigns through my website and through Amazon. So the best thing, if you're looking for a deal, is to wait for one of my Kickstarter campaigns, go to my website, find out when it is, sign up to my email or social media, and then wait for a Kickstarter campaign, and then get one of my special packages. Because at each Kickstarter campaign, I'll have, like, buy these three games and get this fourth one, you know, for free, or, you know, all these kind of combinations that you can get.
Sure. So you mentioned social media. Going right to social media, where can people tweet at you, follow you on Instagram, Facebook, whatever?
Well, I have a Twitter at Dr. Fins. It's Dr. Fins. And then I have a Facebook page. You can just look it up. You know, it's Dr. Fins Games. And that one, you don't spell out doctor. The best thing to do is just to go to my website because I have all the links there.
Okay, sure. So, well, thank you very much for spending some time with us, for showing us the little flower shop, and I hope you have an excellent couple days.
Well, thanks so much for visiting.
All right. Thanks. Hey, everybody. This is Andrew on the show floor at PAX Unplugged 2017. It's getting close to the end of day one, and I am sitting down with Michael Fox from the Creativity Hub. How are you?
I am good. I'm getting a touch of the Barry Whites now. I've been demoing games all day, showing them off, and I can already feel my voice going a little bit. Come Sunday, I think I'm going to be a wreck, but the show itself has been amazing thus far.
Yeah, I am loving this. You know, I've done PAX Easts before, PAX Primes, and this is just definitely a much more laid-back feel. I think there's not a lot of booming voices talking about who won the latest game of Rocket League or whatever in the background.
I mean, my kind of vibe for this is it feels half like a normal PAX. Like, I mean, I've only done PAX East previously, so it's half that and half Origins. It's got that. This is not a small convention. This is like 22,000 people who are coming over the course of the next couple of days. For us in the UK, that's a big show. Of course, in America, you compare it to something like Gen Con, which is a lot more folks, then it's going to be a smaller one. But this is lovely. We've had so many people walking by, checking out the games, seeing what we've got available. And it's lovely just having so many people who are interested in what we're doing.
Right. And, I mean, that's absolutely true. You know, I think the Creativity Hub, you know, the product that everybody kind of knows is the Rory Story Cubes, uh-huh, which has been licensed in the States by Game Right. And that's now been, I guess, sold to Asmodee. So they have that now. But you guys have some really awesome stuff. I'm sitting in front of a copy of Untold, mm-hmm, which went through Kickstarter. We had Rory on when the Kickstarter was live. And this is now officially launched as of Essen, right?
As of Essen, yeah. Right? So this is the U.S. debut for it, basically. So we had a choice. We could either have gone to BGG down in Dallas and put it in front of, say, 3,000-odd really, really hardcore gamers. Or we could come here and essentially maximize it a bit more and put it in front of many, many more people. And a lot more people who are not your hardcore gaming audience. Like, the folks here, we've had so many people who say, I've just got into games, or I'm kind of new to the scene, I don't really know what I like yet. And frankly, those are the kind of people we want to be playing these games. We want as many people as possible playing the games. I mean, hell, yeah, we want the hardcore gamers to play them. Sure, of course we do. But I also want a load of folks who are going away for Thanksgiving this coming Thursday. And I want them to be sitting down with a copy of Blank with their grandmother and going, hey, try this out. You'll know how to play it in 2 minutes. And you can play something that's very, very different.
Well, you're here, so I'm going to say that I think you made the right decision, because that means that I can sit down and talk to you.
Yeah, of course.
So I got the chance to watch you running a game of Untold.
Uh-huh.
And it was quite the silly experience. Can you give a plot synopsis for people maybe who don't really know what Untold is kind of about? And then, well, I guess maybe a little bit of the mechanics just quickly, and then the plot synopsis to really help people put meat on the bone.
So the idea behind Untold as a game is it's an episodic storytelling game. So essentially a stripped down, we don't really want to call it a role-playing game. Obviously, you know, there is character creation, there is episode setup, but the idea is you are creating a story that you can revisit again and again and again with the same characters in essentially a TV show that you create. You are the heroes of this show, and you set the whole thing up by answering a few questions at the very, very start of the game. when and where it's taking place, anything strange you need to know, anything a bit different, and how you're going to play the game. Is it going to be light and airy? Is it going to be really, really serious? And of course, the game that we played was far from serious. We find that happens a lot at conventions. People just want to try and almost break the game, try and see how silly they can make it happen. But the game is actually driven by story cubes. This is going to be essentially the last hurrah for story cubes from us, now that Asmodee own them. But it plays out over 5 scenes. There are scene cards which have icons and spaces for the story cubes to go into. And you can translate them, for example, I mean, obviously this is all audio, but the card that I have in my hand is all saying that at this location, this threat is attacking someone or something. You fill up the square spaces with story cubes, and that determines what the location and the threat will be. And then you answer a series of questions and perform a series of actions to work your way through the story. Over the 5 scenes, things will progress. You know, the plot will thicken, you'll move to new locations, mysterious secrets will be unveiled, and there's always going to be a big, epic final showdown. And whether you're successful in that showdown, you come to like an actual logical, serious conclusion, or you have a strange and curious cliffhanger at the end of it, you'll always work through those 5 scenes every single time. And we actually encourage people to go back, to turn that single, almost pilot episode into a series, because they'll see their characters grow. So we had a nanotechnician. So the idea of the game that we just played was a sci-fi adventure series set in 2035 in the beautiful city of New Philadelphia, where it turned out that AI was just about to hit the singularity. It's like within grasping distance. However, it turns out over the course of the game that the AI was actually under the control of external forces. And the external forces were actually not trying to help humanity, they were actually trying to seize all of the knowledge and information that humanity has gained over the millennia, seize it for themselves, and essentially turn the human race into sheep, into a race of, you know, subservient slaves. And then the wrestling happened. So it turned out that the main person behind this was actually former WWE wrestler Kevin Nash, who was actually a being from another planet who was the leader of this massive global conspiracy. And then it got weirder. There were floating drone eyeballs flying through the sky chasing people. It turned out they were actually on the good guy's side. It was a beautiful thing. The final scene ended with one of our characters firing a shotgun at Kevin Nash, slap bang, straight through the eyes. He was actually a hologram, and it turned out that the last moments of the final scene were the hologram of Kevin Nash mocking and laughing our 3 heroes and saying, you know, I'm here to destroy humanity, you are never going to stop me. So an awesome cliffhanger to jump straight back into for episode 2 of the series.
I love it. I mean, it really was, it was all laughter at the table basically the whole time. It was a ton of fun even just to watch and not participate.
It was great. I mean, it was the first demo we've run here at the show. We've mainly been sort of doing a quick like 10-minute this is how the game works demo. And Essen, I ran through this game 38 times over the course of 4 days. 38 full adventures.
That's exhausting.
It was, but every episode was the same thing. People enjoying themselves, laughing, no matter what it was. Victorian steampunk submarine exploration, through to a reality show set on Earth 4, which is being watched by the people of Earth 5, but the people of Earth 4 don't realize it, and they're all living in like essentially a Stone Age civilization. So many weird, wonderful, and beautiful ideas spawn from this game. And the thing that links them all is that fun, is that laughter. People just have a ball playing it. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I really like, that you can kind of come at a game like Untold 2 different ways. One of them is, you know, RPGs, your D&Ds or your whatever, are too complicated. I don't want to play something like that. I want something easier, but I like the idea of pretending to be someone else, Untold. And the other side of it is, I like story cubes. They're very approachable. You roll some dice, you tell a story. But putting structure around that is sometimes a little bit harder than some people realize.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what Untold provides,
is the structure to say, okay, well, you, one of these story cubes is going to do this kind of a thing. How do you want to put it into that environment? And I love the way the reaction and the outcome cards work, where you flip it over, it's red or green, which means it worked or it didn't. And sometimes there's a but on it or an and then on it to kind of encourage the story to progress or to continue forward, but with a hitch. And it's a great way, again, to put a little bit of structure around the story, but leave it as open as possible so that people can make the story that they want to tell.
Yeah, definitely. And literally any story you want to tell will work in this structure. Whether you want sci-fi, whether you want fantasy, whether you want adventure, whether you want reality TV, the entire choice is down to you. It works. It works. I was going to say it works beautifully, but no. The main thing is it just works. It's like an Apple product, like in 2007.
Yeah, accurate. So the other game that you have on the show floor is a game called Blank.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So Blank is a very, very accessible card game. The idea behind it was that we wanted to make a super simple card game that literally anybody could play, that was recognizable, that was familiar. So say, for example, if you know how to play Uno, you will basically know how to play Blank. It's a game of having a bunch of cards in your hand, playing them out, and matching either the colors or the numbers. The twist is, at the start of every game, you flip out three rule cards, and these will have a permanent effect on how the game works. There's a whole bunch of them, it's like 15 at the start of the game, and you will always use only three of them. So you flip, flip, flip. And it might be something like, every time a one is played, everybody has to take their hand and slap it on the draw pile. Last person to do that has to draw a card as a penalty. Another one might be, if you say another player's name while playing, you have to draw a card as a penalty, that kind of thing. So it means that you, instead of saying, oh, Andrew, it's your turn, I have to go, ah, you, with the glasses, it's your turn, that kind of thing. But people forget because they're going, ah, oh, Rory, it's your turn. And then Rory starts laughing because that's the sixth time I've done it that game, and that happens a lot. So on top of that, there's also game effect cards. If the bottom half of every card can have a space for text. And if that text is written in on that card, it's the top card on the pile, that effect triggers immediately. So the game immediately becomes a bit more than those simple matching color, matching number games. What is unique about the game is once you've finished a round, if you are the winner of the game, you've got rid of all the cards in your hand, you then get to make a permanent change to the game. You write on a card, you write a new rule card, or you modify a game card. And that, from the very first game, takes your simple, basic starting structure and turns it into something unique for your game group. Whether you're playing with your family and friends, whether you're playing with just a bunch of folks over at game night, drinking buddies, whatever. This game is open and accessible enough to work with whatever group, and then it evolves and becomes a snapshot of that group as the games progress. It's like, essentially, it's a game design game. It teaches you how to make a game. If you make a rule that I hate, I might introduce a rule that will negate it or change it or modify it. So I have to be lucky enough to win the game, first of all, but then I have to be clever enough to come up with a rule that's going to have an effect on other stuff. So, it just sort of like grows, it evolves, and we're really hoping that, people pick it up and give it a shot.
Yeah, Anitra and Claire, my daughter, were playing, and Claire somehow managed to win, and so she got to write.
I saw she ran over and was very, very excited.
Yeah, she got to write on a card, and it was kind of neat to watch her create a card, and then my wife also created a card, and Rory kind of coached him a little bit on, well, think about this aspect of that, and these kind of things, and so it really does. It's design thinking, right, which I really think Creativity Hub started kind of talking about a lot with things like extraordinaires, and that's kind of evolved into something much more simple and elegant, I think, in Blank.
I mean, that's always the thing that we want to do with our games. We want them to, we don't just want to do another Euro game that's pushing cubes around a thing. We don't want to do like another minis game that's just, all right, you roll a dice, and, oh, congratulations, you shot the other person, you win. We want our games to, initially, the first thing is they have to be good. You know, we have to be happy enough with them and proud enough of them to actually get them out there. But when you actually sat down in front of a copy of Untold or a copy of Blank or a copy of Mysterious Name Redacted Project X that's coming out next year, that's a great name for a game, I must write that down. we want you to think about something. We want you to feel something. These need to be games with heart. They need to be games that make people think. Now, not necessarily, I'm not going to go and say, oh, we're going to make the most worthy games, and you have to really consider everything, and you have to go, oh, I am so anguished and tortured playing this game. We want these games, like I said, to be good. They need to be great games, first of all. But if you scratch away at the surface and have a little look back and say, we're going to include things in all of the rule books saying, why did we make this game? It's on our website as well. What was the reason behind us making this game? And the reason behind blank is because we wanted people to experience what it's like to start with something simple and create a game that is uniquely theirs. Same thing with Untold. We wanted people to be able to experience like the joy of doing a storytelling game, the joy of experiencing an RPG, but not having to worry about, do I have enough D10s, or how many different spells do I have, or what augmentations do I have in my character? And there's like a list of 300 different things in a rule book that's 600 pages long. Like, our rule book is, got it right here, it's 8 pages. And I wrote this. And we wanted it to be as understandable and accessible for as many people as possible. But it doesn't matter who's playing it. If you have, you know, sitting down with your family around a copy of Untold, and like, you know, you've got the 6-year-old, got the 8-year-old, mum and dad, they can have as good a time with this game as the bunch, the most hardcore bunch of D&D players who've been sitting down for the last 30 years, and they began with, you know, D&D 1, they worked their way through 2nd edition, 3rd edition, 4th edition, they're complaining in the 5th edition, it's just, oh, it's not good enough. It's, they can experience as good an RPG in one single hour with a copy of Untold as they can with anything else. Because we built it with heart. We built it to make people feel stuff and make people think about what they're doing, even if what they're doing is attempting to shoot down a hologram version of Kevin Nash. It's got to have meaning and soul and heart, and literally everything that we're going to put out is going to have that. I mean, we are used to being, oh, we're the Story Cubes people. We're not the Story Cubes people anymore. That's Asmodee.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it still has Rory's name on it, but we're not really that much involved in how they're making them, how they're doing them, anything they're going to do with them in the future. We're still consulting with them. Rory is still like essentially on retinue to be available if they have questions or if they want to come up with new ideas. But we're moving into games now, and we want our games to shine. We want our games to be the games that people play. Unfortunately, we are a small company. We're not Z-Man. We're not Tasty Minstrel. We're not Fantasy Flight. We are essentially this, we're a startup again. And we need to start from fresh, build up the reputation. And we want people to think when they go, oh, okay, I want a game that's going to be a bit different. A game that's going to make you think. A game that's got a bit of heart to it. We want people to go, I should probably check out Creativity Hub, see what they've got.
Well, I mean, I think you've done that with Untold. I mean, it really was something that I never, in all the time that I stood here and watched, I never saw a single real concern about the mechanics of the game, and it was all about the story of the game, which is exactly what you want.
It just flows really nicely, and that's the result of 2 years, more than 2 years' work from the co-designers, Rory himself, Rory O'Connor, and John Fiore, who is like educational specialist, who came to Rory one day with this, I have an idea for a role-playing game using story cubes. Can we do it? Like, he came up with this thing called the 9 Cubes, and it's very, very good. Just check it out. It's still available. And between the two of them, they have built this beautiful thing. It's excellent. It's wonderful. Everybody should play it. Please buy it. It's available out there now. Go get it.
So speaking of that, that's a great segue. So my understanding is this is not in distribution yet.
It will be very, very soon.
Very soon. Okay, so how would people get a hold, like, if they listen to this and they want to get a copy of this, say, for Christmas, how would they do that?
So the easiest way is, of course, online. It's always online. You can get it direct from us. If you go to thecreativityhub.com/shop, you can get it straight from there. We have hubs in Europe and in the US, so it'll get shipped out and you'll have it within a couple of days. Of course, there is the ever-loving behemoth that is Amazon. It's all on Amazon. You can get both Blank and Untold on there. But get it from us, because we get more money that way. Hey, we're always going to be honest about it. We might as well. But yes, it will be in distribution very, very soon. It's definitely going to be in the UK. Stevie will have it there, so your friendly local game shops will be able to pick it up there. We're talking, of course, with the distributors over here, ACD, Alliance, all those good folks. So yeah, badger your local game shop. Your local game shop can then badger your their local distributors, and then we'll sell through millions and millions of copies. Everybody would be very, very happy.
Awesome. So where can people get a hold of you or the Creativity Hub in general on social media?
All right, so Creativity Hub is on Twitter. It's at @creativity_hub. My personal one is at @IdleMichael. It gets very shouty sometimes, but most of the time it's very, very silly. Board games, wrestling, and various dumbness. But the Creativity Hub one is where you're going to get all the information about the games that we're doing, the shows that we're attending, the stuff that we're up to. It also has all of our YouTube stuff on it. So we are doing regular videos, updates about everything that we're up to. If you're interested in playtesting future games, that kind of thing, it's all there. On top of that, yeah, that's about it. It's creativityhub.com is our website. Come visit us. You can see our shining faces and all the cool stuff that we do.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you spending some time with us, with me, Rory, with everybody playing Blank, and then getting a chance to watch some Untold. I had a lot of fun doing it. I hope you had a lot of fun playing it.
It was awesome. Thank you very much for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you again soon.
All right. Take care. Hey, everybody. It's Andrew on the show floor, PAX Unplugged 2017. Again, I am standing in the Arcane Wonders booth, and I am here with Tony. How you doing, Tony?
I'm doing great.
So you just walked me through a couple of rounds of the board game Viral from you guys. It's this really neat area control game. Lots of color. You're kind of playing around as viruses inside the human body.
Yeah, that's correct. So it's territory control. You're trying to control organs that are zones within the body. So you want to control the large intestine, small intestine, stomach. That's one big zone that gives you points. And the object is to gain viral points, mutate along the way, and become the biggest, baddest virus that you can be. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's as we sat down to play this game, and it happens with a lot of games, there's kind of a couple things you got to get over that hump to figure out what the rules are and stuff. And then as we were playing, I started to notice some other things that continue to make the game a little bit more unique. So over the course of the game, when you control various organs, there's both victory points that you earn, but there's also this research thing that happens.
Yeah, so essentially the research is the doctors outside the body researching a cure for you. So unlike a typical territory control game where you're hunkering down, building your forces, continuing to build stronger and stronger, that can't happen in Viral. Because what will happen is you will continue to put your viruses down, and then they will either cause crisis, which will make white blood cells come in and destroy you, or you will gain so many viral points and research that a cure will be found, which will wipe all of your viruses. So in Viral, really, you're trying to mitigate. These things are going to happen. You are viruses in the human body, which are going to get destroyed in some fashion. The body itself is the most dangerous thing to you. So you're trying to mitigate that by becoming the most deadly, most strongest virus in the shortest time possible. And yeah, that's how we're getting.
And of course, if you infect the brain, then research goes down. I don't know if that's because researchers don't want to research people's brains, or the virus gets smarter, or what.
The actual token are randomly placed.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice that. Okay.
It does change each time you play it, with which zones are worth what points.
Oh, okay.
And there are also a couple extra ones in there that allow you to have a different experience each time you play.
Oh, interesting. Because when we played, the only negative that was out happened to be in the brain, and it made sense in my head, I guess. So.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, no, that is definitely one thing. There are a couple negatives. There also is a mechanic that when someone reaches 21 points, that all of the tokens will flip over. And at that point in time, they also have different victory point values and research values.
Interesting. And so one thing that I know doesn't change, and I can tell because it's printed on the board, so is the pathways.
Correct.
So that's a pretty neat thing that's a little bit different about this as opposed to your classic kind of area control where you're just moving geographically from one place to another. You have to follow these pathways.
Yeah, so you are flowing through the body like blood flows. As you move, you are, like, if the heart, you can move from the heart to a large number of different organs in the body. However, once you're down in the kidneys and intestinal tract, you start having a limited number of areas you can then go to. You'd have to go back up to the heart and such through that, those areas.
Right, and of course, things like, in order to get to the brain, you have to get there through the heart and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, we had a lot of fun. We only played 2 rounds out of 6. But it definitely gave us enough of an opportunity to get a flavor of the game and to see how all the different phases transition. Over the course of an entire game, you know, like you were telling us, you only play about 24 cards.
Right.
And you're just kind of watching the sort of the game system adjudicate itself out to see what happens.
Yeah, and because really the only phase that you're playing anything is the first phase of the round. Everything afterward is tracking the points, tracking crisis events, having the cure possibly happen, and then reordering your tiebreaker check.
And you said the game's 12 plus, is that what you said?
Yeah,
it's rated for?
We have it rated as.
Right, but we're both watching my 6-year-old playing the game right now.
Yes. depending on a child's proficiency with different games and such, in reality, all you are doing is choosing a location card and a mutation card. As long as they can understand the fact that those two cards that you choose have a huge impact on the overall strategy of the game, but younger players will be able to play just by selecting cards.
Right, so it is very approachable, and that's kind of where I was going with that, and that's excellent. There is a fair amount of conflict in the game, too, so if you have a child that doesn't deal well with conflict, that is something to keep in mind.
Yes, because you are, with the territory control, trying to be in control of the organs. You can attack the other players and defend your own. But ultimately, compared to some games which are they feel very brutal in that you're fighting other people, I don't really think Viral hits that because the body itself and the board itself is going to hurt you much more than anything else. It's the white blood cells coming in to destroy your gut, your viruses. The body itself, the cure from the doctors, wiping out your viruses. As long as from my impression, as long as you're explaining that this is really what the body does in uncertain terms,
sure.
Saying, yes, if you get a vaccine, doctors, or if you get a shot, the doctors will cure your virus or something, then basically the bacterial infection will be removed and you'd be removed from the body or something.
Right, and you know, I mean, to be honest, I didn't feel like the conflict in it was, you know, particularly malicious or anything like that. And I think that's where, I think the hurt feelings come in when you get that kind of take that gameplay.
Yeah.
And that's not really, even though there definitely is conflict, it's not really like that.
No, and it's the little moves that are more. It's how you move and use the different cards. Like, there are some kind of tricksy things you can set up. You can absorb and bring all the opponent's viruses to you and then move them away so that they don't get points and things like that, that people are like, oh, man. But you have to think about that and set it up several moves if you really want to capitalize on things.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I had a lot of fun. Asher's playing it now. Looks like he's having a lot of fun. The game looks great. All the animations. The guy on the front of the box reminds me of the monster from Monty Python. I don't know why. I'm sure you've heard that before.
Yeah, we've heard that.
So I love the art to this game. Anybody who listens to our show knows that I'm big on the art for this stuff. I really think you've got a home run with Viral here.
Great. I really appreciate hearing that. It's been doing really well for us since Gen Con, and we just continue to want to bring it out and open up and talk to more markets about it. So
I would be remiss if I didn't mention that you've also got an expansion to another game, which is basically probably an evergreen title for you guys anyway, and that's the new expansion to Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yes. So the expansion to Sheriff of Nottingham just came out. It is Merry Men. we had a preview of it as well at Gen Con, and then it released shortly thereafter. And it has been doing great for us. I mean, if you love Sheriff of Nottingham, or even if you just like Sheriff of Nottingham, the thing is that it adds a lot of different ways to play and add to the game. So you can mold the game with the expansion to best fit your playgroup, because there are tons of different modules that you can bring in. The Merry Men, which are Robin Hood and Friar Tuck and Little John and Maid Marian, you can smuggle them into Nottingham now, and they have special bonus effects that occur that are fun and have cute things, like Robin Hood steals 6 gold from the sheriff and then distributes it amongst the other players, and little things that tie into the feel of Robin Hood and Sheriff of Nottingham. And the other ones that we have ways that different play groups have said that I'm not really going to bring contraband in. It's going to be I'm just bringing in all the things. And there are incentives to bringing in contraband. There's also the laws, which are really great, because when they are face up on the board, they actually are game rules. So you start having a variable game rule that is set by the sheriff, like bread is now contraband, or an apple tax. If you declare 10 apples, you have to pay 1 gold for each apple, and things like that that really change up the game and give it a little bit more flavor and pizzazz in different areas.
Yeah, I mean, Sheriff, I mean, I think it's always been really fun for that kind of those people who enjoy those bluffing games, but it wasn't super multi-dimensional, and now it sounds like that Merry Men is really adding a lot of different layers and dimensions to the game.
Yeah, it's absolutely bringing new layers, new different ways to play, a lot of different options, so that you can kind of help mold the game into how you want your experience to be.
Awesome. So what else do you have in the booth this weekend? I mean, this won't go up until afterwards, but what else is out there and available for people?
Yeah, so we have two other games that we're really focusing on here at PAX Unplugged. Onitama. Onitama is a two-player abstract game, similar to chess, that has been doing wonderfully for us. It came out about 2 years ago, but it just came out with an expansion earlier this year. And basically, the object of the game is to capture your opponent's master by moving onto it, or moving your master into their starting position. Similar to chess, but your moves are right in front of you.
Okay.
So the way you can move all of your pieces is dictated by your two move cards.
Okay.
When the move is used, it goes into the center. You take the center card, and in that fashion, the 5 moves that are available will rotate amongst the players.
Sure.
So you can, it's all perfect information. So you can see what your opponent can do, they can see what you can do, and you can see several moves ahead. And it's all laid out right in front of you. So unlike chess, where you have to memorize different moves and openings, everything's right there. So it is another very accessible type game. So.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you say that right at the end there. One of the things that we talk about is that one of the great ways to bring kids along and to teach them gaming is to play games that don't have hidden strategy.
Correct.
And that sounds like exactly what you've got here.
And aside from that, we have Spoils of War. It's another game that utilizes a bidding, bluffing type mechanic, but it's using the Liar's Dice mechanic, where everyone's rolling dice under their cup, looking at their dice, and then they're bidding quantities of dice up until a challenge is made. So you're all Vikings, you're all bidding the dice. A challenge is made, you bet a little bit of gold, and it utilizes a set collection as well, where you're getting treasures if you are correct and on the correct challenge side and go from there. So.
Cool. That sounds like a lot of fun. Well, listen, thank you so much for taking some time to show us Viral. It looks like they're having a blast of this new game of it over here. I'm really excited for this game. I really think it's gonna blow things up a bit.
No, I appreciate you coming by, and everything's just been real great. A whole new crowd here at PAX Unplugged of new players that may have not ever played games like this before. We're really excited to be here and see how things really unfold.
So where can people find Arcane Wonders on social media?
On social media, you can find us on arcanewonders.com. It's our website, just redone. It has beautiful game pages for all of our games. has videos and everything right on those pages. You can also find us at Arcane Wonders page on Facebook and Twitter. Okay. And those are the most active places.
Awesome. And where is the best place for you to go, for somebody to go and pick up one of these games?
Definitely the local game store. They're all over the place. A lot of our games can also be found at Barnes & Noble, and Sheriff Nottingham can be found at select Target stores as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Tony, for spending some time, and I wish you more success with these last 2 days of PAX.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
So I'm here on the show floor with Nate from Gigamic.
Hi there.
And so he was going to tell me a little bit about Gigamic and what they do and their games that are coming out.
Yep.
So you told me a little bit about it, but now that we're recording, yep, if you wouldn't mind telling me again.
Oh, no, that's not a problem. Gigamic has been in the business for 26 years. Our launch title was Quarto, the game where you're trying to get four in a row, but your opponent chooses the piece you get to place on the board. We're best known for Quarto, Corridor, and Catamino. Each of those has sold over a million units worldwide. We're in 55 different countries and published in 30 different languages.
Wow. I can say that we at the Family Gamers hadn't heard of you at all until we got Corridor a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we've been under-promoted and under-distributed in the U.S. for a number of years.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the other games you have that aren't the abstract strategy games?
Well, we have a lot of titles in what we call our Tin Series. New this year is Yogi, the hilarious game of twisted poses, where on your turn you draw a card, you read it aloud, and you do what it says. Like one card may say, hold this card between two hands, and you have to continue doing that for the rest of the game.
Oh, boy.
So you continue doing that while you're drawing other cards. So if you've got that card between your two hands and your next card says, you have to reach down, draw a card, and this card says, touching your neck. So now you've got both of your hands up by your neck.
Oh, my goodness.
Or you pin that card between your neck and chest, you know, to keep it in place while you keep drawing. As it gets more challenging, it gets more fun.
Wow, it's kind of like Twister, but with cards.
Exactly, yeah. Except you don't have to balance your entire body weight on one leg.
Let's hope. any other new games you'd like to
Galapagos is the other one that's getting a lot of excitement. It's 7.2 on Board Game Geek right now. We showed it off at Gen Con. It's a semi-cooperative game where you sometimes have to cook and eat your friends.
Oh, no!
Yeah, you're trying to escape the island before a hurricane comes. You're building rafts to escape and also collecting food and water to keep everybody supplied. At the end of each round, you need enough food and water for everybody, or you got to vote some people out of the tribe until the numbers match up.
I see.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. I mean, a little gory, but also fantastic.
A lot of it is what you as a group choose to bring to the game.
Sure, sure. I think as the Family Gamers, we could probably be just like, we're putting you on a boat and putting you out to sea. We don't have enough food for you anymore.
Yep.
Yeah. We would never do that in the family, though. Yeah. Don't worry.
So, yeah, we have about 30 titles in our catalog, and, you know, we add a couple and remove a couple every year. You know, to keep it that way. It's all of our games are 2 minutes or less to teach, 30 minutes or less to play. Most of them will actually play in under 10. Galapagos plays a little bit longer because of the nature of the game, but all of them are very easy to teach, very fast to play.
Well, thank you very much for your time. It was great to meet you, Nate.
Great to meet you, too.
I'm here with John Covey from Genius Games.
Hello.
I'm here at PAX Unplugged. I think these games look really interesting and different than a lot of what else is out there right now.
Yes, definitely.
Can you tell me a little bit about them?
Yeah, so everything we publish has to be hard science themed. We publish children's books and board games. Now, it started out, I was teaching chemistry. I really wanted to have more just hard science games that I could play with my friends and sometimes with my students, and there didn't seem to be out there. So our focus is purely on games about chemistry, biology, or physics, and we're just taking that science concept and turn it into a game. But it has to be both a really good game, so well-rated on Board Game Geek, you know, well-rated by the gaming community, and also accurate to the science.
Yeah, that's key, because, I mean, you can make a fun game that's sort of like it's got a little science veneer to
it. Right.
But if you end up, you know, learning things that aren't true in gameplay, that's kind of a net loss in the long run.
Exactly. Yes.
So I see the main game you're showing here today is called Cytosis.
That's right.
I literally looked at it, I'm like, okay, Cytosis, I remember that word from high school biology. It has something to do with cells. That's all I got.
That's right. So Cytosis is a worker placement game, which means you are taking some of your flasks, which represent your workers,
okay,
and you're placing them in any of the available organelles on the cell.
Okay.
Those organelles are going to award you resources, like in the nucleus, you'll get mRNA, and then in the game, they're represented by cubes. And the mitochondria, you'll get ATP. You're using all of those resources. There's also proteins and carbohydrates and lipids. You're using those resources to complete cards. And those cards are essentially like your quests or your objectives.
Sure, sure.
And those are what score you health points. So the different kinds of cards are hormones, receptors, enzymes, and detoxification of the cell.
Okay.
And that's what scores you health points, and player with the most health points wins at the end of the game.
I love that the player with the most health wins.
That's right.
That's fantastic.
And there's also a virus expansion in the game as well.
Oh, cool.
And so you have attacking viruses, and you'll essentially trying to do is you're trying to build up antibodies to each of the strains of viruses throughout the game.
Ah.
Yeah, and it's a kind of a push your luck. Like,
yeah,
do I want to build up my antibodies to it now and risk when it comes out I'm ready for it, or do I not and use my resources for other things like building enzymes or hormones or receptors?
The things that would help me at the end of the game, but only if I still have them at the end of
the
game. Exactly. Yes. All right, cool. Let's see, what else I'm seeing here? Virulence, where you play as viruses, I assume.
That's exactly right.
And peptide. That's another one where I'm like, I remember that word from biology, and that's about it.
Yeah, so
protein building. Okay.
Peptide is about protein building. You're essentially trying to collect ATP, amino acid cards, and an mRNA chain, and you're connecting with those and other organelles your amino acids side by side to form a polypeptide chain. At the end of the game, the player with the most difficult to build polypeptide chain, which is dependent upon how many different types of mRNA it needs to build, that player scores the most points, and that player wins.
Cool.
Yeah.
We'll give a brief shout out to the chemistry games I see here.
Yes.
Too. There's Covalence and Ion.
That's right.
Yeah.
Ion is about using ions and building neutral compounds. It's card drafting. Covalence is a cooperative game where one player knows the secret molecules the other players need to build, but those players who are trying to build them don't know what they're trying to build, and the person who knows cannot talk to them verbally.
Okay.
They must communicate via these clue cards, things like various numbers and cards that say carbon or nitrogen or oxygen or double bond or single bond, to communicate to them what they're trying to build.
Neat! Yeah. So it's a clue-giving game.
Yeah,
on
puzzle-style kind of game. Right.
That sounds really neat. I would be remiss if I didn't also mention the two book series you have setting out here.
So we have two different series. My first science textbook, what we try to do with that, the first book is called Protons and Neutrons, the second is Electron, and the third one is Atoms. The first and second book, what we did is we gave each of the subatomic particles a personality based upon its physical properties. So Ned the neutron is very neutral and kind of sad, and Pete the proton is really happy. And then in the third book, they come together to form atoms, and it shows how they bond to form molecules and compounds and essentially create everything in our universe. And we do it in a way that's really cute and nice illustrations for young kids.
Yeah, I took a look at it. I mean, it looks kind of like your typical picture book,
right?
You know, rhyming, you know, easy to read, if not necessarily easy to understand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then our second series is a Women in Science series. And we try and do two things with that. First, we want to teach young kids about chemistry, biology, and physics.
Sure.
And second, we highlight a lot of the accomplishments that women scientists have made throughout history to the scientific community, but weren't given credit for because of the culture that they lived in. So we're using their research and their contributions to the scientific community to teach those concepts in chemistry, biology, and physics to young kids.
Yeah, I was looking at a couple of those. I really liked it talking about... I was looking at the chemistry book, and it mentioned, you know, there was Cleopatra back about 2,000 years ago,
right?
You know, who we would probably call an alchemist, but she was figuring out that things were made of, you know, of different things.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And experimenting.
Exactly.
So, I think your stuff is great. Most of your games that I'm looking around at are 10 plus.
That's right. Yep.
And given what I'm seeing, we have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I'd say that's about right. Our 9-year-old could probably handle it, but she wouldn't get the concepts right away, and that's okay.
Right.
So I think I think it's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Where can people find your games?
They can find us at geniusgames.org.
All right.
They can find them on Amazon or our website, and hopefully in a lot of your friendly local game stores.
Excellent.
And if you can't, please go tell them, get these games.
Yes. All right. Well, that was John Covieu.
That's right.
Thank you very much for your
thank
time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, everybody. It's Andrew at PAX 2017. I'm here with Claire.
Hi.
And I'm also here with Allison Haslip. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys? Wait, is it going?
Oh, it's going.
This app is so cool. Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that neat?
I'm obsessed with this app. It's so much fun.
So we're here in the Yellow booth talking about Yellow Games. You're the brand ambassador for Yellow.
I am.
And we want to talk about some of the stuff that has come out before that we've played and about your cool figurine over there.
Oh, my little Allie song. Look at her.
What do you think of the Allie song, Claire?
I like it.
Yeah.
She's a 50-foot tall double katana wielding ninja destroying Tokyo or New York, depending on which version you play.
Right, absolutely. So Claire, you played Yellow Games. You played The Mysterious Forest. Have you ever played The Mysterious Forest?
I haven't played that one yet. That's the thing, when you become a brand ambassador, they send you all the games, and then you realize how many games there actually are. So I have stacks and stacks of Yellow Games in my apartment, just waiting for friends to come over to play them all with. So I haven't gotten through them all yet.
You'll end up on the Yellow version of Hoarders.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Mysterious Forest is a game all about memory, and it's based on a webcomic.
Oh, cool.
So you should check it out. It's a lot of fun. So, Claire, what is your, let's see here. Allison, what's your favorite Yellow game right now?
I really enjoy Mount of Madness that came out at Gen Con this past year because as I was learning the game, well, first, I really like co-op games. I like games where you're playing against the game, not against the other people you're playing the game with. I like teamwork and things like that. And Mount of Madness, I realized as you're playing it, is a game that the goal of the game is not the point of the game. The goal of the game is to, collect enough relics to justify the amount of injuries your team acquires on while escaping this mountain. Yes, that's the goal. But the point of the game is to figure out how to communicate with your team members as you are giving various degrees of madness that has to change the way you talk. So, for instance, maybe you can only talk to people if they have finger mustaches. Or maybe you can't... Yeah, so now I can talk to you, Claire. or maybe you can't say numbers. You can only say months instead of numbers. So if you wanted to say you had 11 tools, you would say, I have November tools. And people have to go, why is that person saying a sentence that doesn't make sense to me? They have to figure out how you're communicating with them, which I think is really cool. To me, it's like it's a team-building type of game.
What do you think of that?
That's cool.
All right. Well, we'll have to see if we can figure out a way to try that out. Anything else? What else do you like? I saw you were. What were you playing over here?
Sea of Clouds. It's one of my favorites.
Okay. Is that a newer game? I don't recognize it.
It's new-ish, but I think it's been out for a little over a year now.
Okay.
But it's a drafting game, and you are not sea. You're air pirates. So you have airships that fly around to various islands, and you're competing against the other airship captains, and you acquire artifacts and rums, and you can pick up crew members and things like that as you're flying around these islands. And then at some of the islands, you have to fight each other. So like your pirates have to fight, and then if you win the battle, you get extra gold or something like that. But I really enjoy it because the game only takes about 10-ish minutes to play through a round. It's super fun, and I also like games that you don't know how you're doing until you score it at the end. So, like, you could think you were way ahead because you have X amount of relics, but because people have hidden cards, you don't know what those are going to add up to at the end. And I think it's great because that way you have to pay attention the entire game. You can't tap out on it.
Which, of course, with kids is super important, to keep them kind of involved and make sure that they know what's going on.
Right, and that no one's feeling like they're not doing a good job halfway through the game.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. What do you think about that? Does that sound like fun?
Yes.
All right. Do you have any questions for Ms. Haslip?
No.
No, you don't think so?
Have you seen, have you seen Sticky Chameleons?
Mm-mm.
Okay, you're going to have to go try out this game when we're done the interview. It's right over there.
All right.
You basically have these long, sticky tongues like this, and you roll the dice. So, like, this is a yellow and a caterpillar, so you have to use the long sticky tongue to slap up the yellow caterpillar before someone else slaps up the yellow caterpillar.
Do you really have a long sticky tongue?
Yes! It's amazing. It's really awesome. I bet you'd like this one a lot.
You want to try that one out?
Yes.
All right. All right, sounds like a lot of fun. Well, any more questions that you have?
No.
All right. Thank you very much for coming on and having a little bit, a little interview with us.
Yeah.
And maybe next time Claire will be a little bit more talkative.
Yeah, enjoy your PAX and fun, Claire.
All right. Where can people find you online?
On Twitter and Instagram, I'm at Allison Hayslip, and Facebook is at Allison Hayslip Official.
Awesome. And what's the best way for people to get ELO's games?
I'm assuming yellow.com. I'd be upset if that wasn't the answer.
All right. I know they're on Amazon. And always, as always, go head to your friendly local game store.
Yes.
All right. Thanks so much, Allison.
Thank you.
Hello, everybody. This is Andrew with the Family Gamers at PAX Unplugged 2017, and I am standing in the Bezier Games booth with Phoebe. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's getting close to the end of day two. You know, it's been another very busy day, but we got the chance to come together and check out some really cool stuff.
Yeah, it feels like the end of day two. I can guarantee that.
So when we first got in, we got a chance to sit down and play New York Slice, which is a really cool game. It's sort of this I pick, you choose kind of game. I don't remember exactly how you described it. That involves pizza, which is making me hungry.
It's actually, so it's a reskin of a piece of cake with some design changes and things like that by Jeffrey Allers. And so someone will have to slice the pizza into as many sections as there are players, and then they get left with the section that nobody else wants. So everyone else picks, and they get whatever's left. The idea being you're trying to collect types of the same pizza, eat pepperoni, and end up with the most points at the end of the game. But it's a really nice, quick playing filler game that really fits, you know, strategy gamers, but also families and kids, and plays really quickly. It's nice and easy to pick up as well.
Right. One of the things I really like about it is that it really embraces that theme really well. So you've got the daily special card. You've got the score sheet looks like a guest check. And it really kind of makes you feel like there's pizza involved, which is probably why I'm so hungry.
My favorite bit of information about the game is that the art of the game, Ted and Tony actually went and bought pizzas and took top-down photos of pizzas, and that's the art in the game, with, you know, some pepperoni and anchovies added on. But the crust looks so realistic on the back because it's actual pizza crust that they took photos of.
Well, that sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Can you tell it's dinner time?
Sorry?
Can you tell it's dinner time?
Yeah, 100%.
All right, well, there's lots of other stuff going on in this booth. You've got a lot going on. You've got Ultimate Werewolf over there. You've got Werewords, and you were just telling me about Werebeast as well.
Yeah, so Werebeast, we just funded on Kickstarter a couple of months ago, and it's our newest bluffing game in the kind of werewolf line, but a separate standalone. So the idea being everyone's trying to collect different kinds of werebeasts. You have hidden goals that you'll share with the players next to you, and so you're trying to bid on the werebeast, collect the ones you need for points, but not be too obvious because other players can call you out and then you'll get eliminated. So it's a little bit of, you know, you can be tricky, you can bid on all the werebeasts that you don't need and hope someone calls you out for that, or try to get the ones you need but be careful about it. So it's really interesting deduction, bluffing, quick party game.
And of course, I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Whistle Stop, which is kind of the craze this year, right?
Yeah, it's our golden child at the moment. It sold out at Gen Con, sold out at Essen, and it was pretty close to selling out here at PAX.
It's going to sell out here.
Yeah. So Whistle Stop is our latest big box game, and it's a train game that boils down the, you know, kind of six-hour economic train games into a 90-minute experience that strategy gamers and families can enjoy together. It's puzzly. You've got route building as you're moving your trains from the east to the west. You're managing your resources. You pick up goods and decide what to spend them on, and ultimately you're trying to get the most points, the most fame for your railroad.
So I'm excited because we're going to sit down right after this and play the game, and I've actually been looking forward to it all day. Also you have the art here for the Palace of Mad King Ludwig. I don't know what the status of that is right now. I just barely started hearing about it maybe a month ago.
Yeah, so we have it for demo here at the booth, actually. It will be available end of December, mid-January, depending on how fast the boat is to America. But yeah, it's on the boat right now, and hopefully we'll be here soon.
Awesome. And of course, there's lots of games in that line, Castles of Madeline, yeah. Secret Rooms, all that stuff. Yeah. So let's see, where is the best place for people to go to find out more information about Bezier Games?
So if they have any questions, they can contact us on social media at Bezier Games on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or they can go to beziergames.com to find all our products. We also have a blog up there as well. So if there's anything that you'd like us to write about, any behind the scenes kind of stuff you'd like to know about, feel free to let us know on social media and we'll make sure to cover that on our blog so you can find out more.
That's super cool. All right, and where's the best place for people to go to get these games?
Beziergames.com is you can get them direct from us or go to your local game store. If they don't stock our stuff, ask them to order it in. They'll be able to get it from distributors.
All right, that sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
It's Nitra from the Family Gamers. We're here at the last day of PAX Unplugged, and I'm here with Justin from Fireside Games.
Hello, everybody.
So tell me a little bit about some of your newest games, Justin.
Right.
We love Castle Panic, but there's a lot more to Fireside than that.
Yes, yes, there is. The two newest things we're the most excited about are Hot Shots and Kaiju Crush. Those are our two new games. Hot Shots is a cooperative press your luck firefighting game where players are going to move around a modular board trying to put out these really cool plastic fire minis. They're going to roll dice to fight the fire. The better they do, the more they'll take out the fire, but if they can't match a new symbol, the fire gets worse. And tiles can only take so much fire before they scorch, so if 8 tiles get scorched, they lose the game. If they can put out all the fire, they win the game. There's all sorts of tricks like using vehicles and teamwork and special player abilities to stay alive, but overall the game's trying really hard to kill you and put more fire on the board. So it's another co-op, but very different than our other stuff.
Yeah, and I like how it really models how wildfires spread in real life and how firefighters fight wildfires.
Exactly. I did a lot of research, and it was a real hoot to do, with the idea of like how important wind is and the idea that fire is unpredictable, yet it's organic. It's not going to grow completely randomly, and that was one of the big challenges in the game, is not just have fire appear without any rhyme or reason, have it follow some logic. It was an interesting challenge, and I'm very happy with what we came up with.
That's awesome. Can you tell me about this other game, Kaiju Crush, as well?
Yes, yes. It lets you fulfill your giant monster fantasy. I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but I always wanted to be a giant monster growing up. So in this game, there are 4 giant monsters that are battling to smash a city and be the best kaiju in the city. And each one has a special ability that matters in combat, and it's a grid of tiles laid out. So again, it's another modular board. You can set it up in different ways. And then you're going to move around the board with a movement system where everyone is dealt 1 movement card that has a distinct movement on it. Like maybe it lets you move up, down, left, right. Maybe it's 1 diagonal or something. And then there's another card that's in the middle that's shared between all the players. And if you use your movement card, it swaps out to become the new shared card. But if you use the shared card, it stays out there. So there's this interesting idea of taking and giving the movement abilities are going to get passed around as the game goes. You fulfill your movement, you land on a city tile, you smash it. It's worth points. It also belongs to 1 of 4 groups that can get you bonus points. And then if you're next to a monster, you fight using your territory marker card as a sort of rock, paper, scissors on steroids thing, which is very fun to play. You can't go back to a space once it's been smashed, though. If it's a crater, it's off limits. So the board gets harder and harder to maneuver as the game goes on. Eventually, everyone's going to have to pass. But before then, you've hopefully used your special ability, had a bunch of combat, and matched the objectives that are things like, did you get a certain shape on the board of your territory markers? Are your territory markers grouped together or spread out? There's all sorts of different things you're going for. You add up all your points that you got from smashing buildings, fighting, and the objective cards, and the highest player wins.
I also love that if at the end you have a tie, you have another rock, paper, scissors to determine the winner.
You have to do the rock, paper, scissors, fire, breath, spikes battle for the final winner, which, yes, does happen if there's a tie. So it's a good light filler game with more strategy than it looks like, but it is super easy to play. You can pick it up in like 2-3 minutes, and then you realize, oh, wait, I need to plan my moves a little more. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like that it was very approachable to start playing, but had a surprising amount of depth.
Yeah. Yeah, we're pretty happy with that. We like to put that in our games where they're easy to get into, but they take a little longer to kind of really learn and master it.
Yeah. If you don't mind, can I steal you for another minute or two to tell our listeners about Here Kitty Kitty?
Yeah, totally. Another favorite of ours, yes. So in Here Kitty Kitty, just like the way Kaiju lets you live out your monster fantasy, this lets you live out your crazy cat person fantasy.
Yes.
Where there are little adorable plastic cats. It comes with 40 different little miniatures. There's orange, gray, white, and black minis in 3 different poses, and they're really adorable. They go in the middle in what we call a neighborhood, like an open area, and then everyone has a board that represents their house, your property. Your property's cut into 3 sections, your yard, your porch, and your house. And you, on your turn, you get 2 actions to move cats or play cards that'll let you steal cats, move cats around, And generally, you want cats on your property. That's the whole point of the game.
Right.
The further you get them in, the more points there were. So they're worth nothing in the yard, 3 points in the porch, 5 points in the house. But you can also do things like steal cats from players, move cats around. You can foster kittens, which can only be stolen if they get adopted. There's all sorts of fun things. A million bad cat puns are in it. And at the end of the game, when the last card is drawn, we do one more round, and then you get points for where the cats are on your property, but there's also bonus points to keep in mind as you're playing. So did you get, for example, one of each cat somewhere on your property? You'll get bonus points. Did you get the most of one color? You'll get bonus points. Are all the cats in the house part of your property the same color? That's worth 10 bonus points.
Wow.
So there's some strategy to what cats you take and where you leave them. It's not just a crazy cat grab, but it is a crazy cat grab.
It's a crazy cat grab, but you're like, well, you know what? I don't really like the orange cat.
Right.
I want to focus on gray cats.
Well, and that's funny, too. People tend to do that. People actually own cats like, oh, I'm only getting the black cats because that's what my cat is. It's like, that's awesome. Go for it. You can totally do that. And it's not even that bad of a strategy, but you might want to throw one or two extra colors in for those bonus points.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's been a really good seller for us. Great game. Super fun. And if you or someone you know likes cats, they're going to like this game.
Well, and again, it's that, like, super simple to explain. Like,
yep.
You're trying to take cats onto your property.
Right,
go.
Exactly. Yeah, ready, go. Yeah, yeah. Use cards or actions. Do it, yeah. So.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Yes,
Justin.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to meet you guys. And hello, Internet people. Have fun. Play more games.
There we go. This is Anitra Smith here with the Family Gamers. And I'm here with Massimo. That's how you say your name?
Yeah.
From Big Potato Games. Tell me about your games.
Sure. Thanks for having me. We have two games with us. The game we're standing by is OK Play, which is up to four players, tile-placed game where you win by getting five of your colour in a row. And you can do that horizontally, vertically, or diagonally.
Okay.
As long as you connect the pieces flat-facingly. It's super simple because that is really the rules. But the beauty of it is that you have to work together if there's more of you playing to block other players, because these pieces don't just drop down into a grid like Connect Four. You put them onto a table in any way you like. So they can go in all directions. So you've got to be really careful what you're exposing yourself to. And then my favorite rule at the end of the game is that if you use all of your tiles, you have to then move one of your colors to another section of the table to try and win. Dangerously, that leaves you exposed somewhere. So it's a great game for kids and families and adults, because really the only rule is just get five in a row to win.
And take turns, yeah.
All
right.
And then the other game is the Chameleon, which is ages 14 up. And it's a social deduction game we made with Ricky Tartar, who's the inventor of Coup. And the idea is that all of you know a word that one person doesn't, and you're trying to work out who doesn't know the word by giving one word clues to secretly communicate with everyone else playing that you know what that word is.
Oh,
so yeah, it's really addictive, and we made loads of topics. It could be about food or phobias or states of the United States. So you can really test your knowledge and really test your knowledge of people that you're playing with. So it's all about bluffing.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Asher,
yeah, keep smoothing down.
You guys are okay.
Yeah, we're doing like a mega combo here, like, because we just want people to get their hands on the game, so we're doing them really cheap. We're not, almost not making a profit, and we're totally happy about that. We're from England. We've never done a convention, a PAX convention before,
sure.
So we're super excited to be here, and we've made like a special promo card for the Chameleon that's all about the city of Philadelphia. I learned a lot about Philadelphia from making that card. I didn't know that the cheesesteak is actually not from Philadelphia, so that's not included.
That sounds great. For people who aren't at PAX Unplugged, where can they find your games otherwise? OK Play and The Chameleon.
So both of these games are exclusively in Target. And you have to head to your local one. You can get them from the website too. They've just redone their website, so it's actually usable now.
Excellent.
Yeah, because in the past, the Target website
has been really tough.
Yeah, but now it actually is like a competitor to Amazon, so that's where you can get them from.
Well, you heard it here. OK Play, which is a tile-laying game, and Chameleon, which is sort of a bluffing game, cooperative bluffing game, and you can buy them both at Target.
Awesome.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So that was all of our interviews from PAX Unplugged. It was a ton of fun. We had an absolute blast. We have so much content this year that we're going to, or next year, I guess, that we're going to bring to you in the form of reviews and interviews and stuff like that that are coming out of PAX Unplugged. We really hope that you enjoyed it.
We apologize for two long podcast episodes back to back, but
hopefully it's good content and enjoyable content to listen to. As always, you can get a hold of us if you have any questions at our Facebook page, facebook.com/familygamersAA, or if you want to talk about the stuff that we have talked about in our community, just go to thefamilygamers.com/community. You can always find our reviews and news and our blog stuff, which we're going to try to do more of at thefamilygamers.com.
Yep.
You can get us on Twitter at
FamilyGamersAA.
Instagram
at FamilyGamersAA.
You can always email us, Andrew at TheFamilyGamers.com.
Anitra at TheFamilyGamers.com.
Asher at TheFamilyGamers.com.
Claire at TheFamilyGamers.com.
So that's going to be it for us this week. Until next week, play games with your kids.